Hello, and welcome to Stop Hammer Time. With me today, and it's great to have him back, is Jim Munro. Jim is the sports editor of The Sun Online. Now, The Sun Online, it's if you imagine a newspaper, and then you imagine the film Tron. That's what you get. That's what essentially this is. Jim, am I right? I now know
what to put on my CV for future reference.
It's like an electric science fiction newspaper.
Electric Dream, right? Yeah,
exactly. It's like what builders have in their back, rolled up in their back pocket, but electric.
Okay, get to sit next to Ruth from Page 3 and page3.com as well, which is obviously one of the big benefits of...
Is there a page3.com?
There is indeed.
I am signing up.
Why are people not knowing these things? You should be on there already, Phil.
Yeah, well, I know. This is a first. I am going on to Page 3 online the second I get in tonight.
Okay, we don't want to hear any more.
No.
That's fine.
Exactly.
Stop.
I've said too much. I'm deeply embarrassed. But yes, it is essentially, if you picture the Sun newspaper, which we all know, and you picture the plot of the film Tron, that's what the Sun Online essentially is, I think.
Mm-hmm.
There's some kind of science fiction laser-based battle, but also hard-hitting news reporting. And Jim, you oversee the sports side of that.
And obviously I do get... the chance to comment on West Ham now and again.
Yeah, absolutely.
Subject close to my heart, and a subject that caused me a lot of grief during my life
That's right.
So
that's right.
That's why you've dragged me in here. It's going to be a cathartic release.
That's right. Yeah, we've deliberately kept all conversation about Saturday's game completely off the agenda during our brief time in the pub, having a gentle vocal warm up.
That's called a pre-production meeting.
Yes, exactly. So obviously we played Newcastle at the weekend, and we will discuss that in detail. I'm also joined by a friend of this podcast who we've never actually met in the flesh until about an hour and a half ago. And if you look at our Facebook group has spawned some very interesting things over the last season. We had the Rhino Long Cake formula, which was, I think, the kind of go-to formula for West Ham survival.
He's still dining out on that.
He had a new formula for... He slightly overstretched himself this season with a formula for how the whole season would go, and that must surely...
It's not going well.
That must have gone tits up, the Rhino Long Cake formula. But we do love Clyde Rhino Long Cake. But also... What we had last season was conspiracy theories abounding from the keyboard of a man, an expat West Ham fan up in the icy wastes of the North of England, principally Sheffield, with whom, as you know, East London is at war.
Yeah.
There's after the Tevez affair, what does that
mean? One half of Sheffield.
Yes, exactly. We declared war on Sheffield, principally Sean Bean. I have offered to fight Sean Bean naked with just a grenade in a field. And I will kill him and defeat him and prevent the world from having to suffer his intolerable acting and stupid views about the Tevez affair.
That would have sounded plausible, but I have actually met you now.
That's right. Well, yeah, you see that I'm a tiny man with a very svelte, almost girl-like physique. So, Sean Bean, I could still beat to death.
That being said, if you saw that mob he marched down to London with from Sheffield, they were all about average age 12. So
exactly.
I think you'd still stand a chance.
Yeah, Peterborough. But he is Rob Chapman. Rob Chapman is here. He has joined us. And he is down on a brief visit to London, where things are far more expensive than in Sheffield.
That is definitely true. And it's also cold.
It's very cold.
It is really cold.
Whereas down here.
Obviously,
yeah, it's really cold here. Absolutely.
Having come from the Bermuda of the North.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Right, okay.
Quite right. Yeah. Well, I was responding to the icy wastelands.
Costa del Steel.
I was trying to get a word in about 5 minutes ago, but I hadn't been introduced at the time, so I didn't exist technically.
No, that's right. You can't... It's the rule of radio.
I'm
calling it radio, but it's using the same vocabulary.
Yeah, absolutely.
If in the listener's mind you can't see the person, they don't exist.
Quite right.
But I've introduced you now.
I exist.
So now for our listeners, the audience have got a picture of you and what you're like.
Well, I like to see, I think of myself, rather than being just a member of the Facebook, I've come up through the Stop Hammer Time Academy. So I'm an academy player who's now, you know, and I'd like to thank the gaffer, actually, for giving me an opportunity to prove myself at this level.
You'll be playing for the Chelsea podcast within about 2 years. You'll have moved on. Rob, you have you have genuine West Ham in your blood and history and blood, I'm going to say again. But also history.
Yes, indeed.
Try heritage as well.
And heritage.
In fact, I can say I believe
Jim,
claret.
I should say Jim is a journalist. Jim is actually just passing adjectives and nouns over to me as I speak. My sentences work a bit better.
At the end of each paragraph, can we get a one-word summary of what that paragraph
indeed.
Means?
Indeed, and I shall be Googling things later as well.
Absolutely.
No, I bleed claret. That's true.
Because you actually have a familial connection to West Ham United.
I do, yes.
Describe it to the listener.
And to you as well.
And to me. Yeah. Well, I'm not interested. I'm going out enough. For a wee now. if you could describe.
My granddad. I feel like one of these people on, you know, Strictly Come Dancing, who's basically only on there because they're related to someone famous. So, and that's not even true. So that's the Z list of that. Right. So, my granddad was Eddie Chapman.
A lot of people are on the X Factor because they're related to Professor X from the X-Men.
I know. Indeed. I don't even come from a broken home, so I haven't even got that in my favour of the X Factor.
So, your granddad...
Yes, is Eddie Chapman. Was played for West Ham for very many years and then became the first, I believe, was club secretary, and then he was the first ever chief executive of a football club. 49 years he was with West Ham. So
Wow.
And bought the Bowling Ground. So... So this is very interesting for me, this whole sort of moving ground. My granddad bought it.
Do you get a percentage of the selling on that? That would be really good.
Like Rio or something.
Player transfers.
To be honest with you, I'd still take that arrangement as long as it doesn't mean I'm still lumbered with the costs of what they buy afterwards.
When he bought the ground, he did have West Ham in mind. It wasn't just like randomly shopping one day and thought, that looks good, patch of green. Bit of a stadium around
Ken Bates style, you mean?
It was a nice rink for a while.
He was one of the first things he did is as soon as he became an administrator, he decided to buy the ground. From the council. And obviously I'm completely biased, but I'd say that may have financially saved our bacon on a couple of occasions. Thus far, and thus I'm not entirely convinced about the idea of moving to a rented ground that we pay large amounts of money to and don't own.
Well, it was interesting that kind of the one sort of impediment to expanding the ground was that school was next to the West Stand. That eventually the problem was solved in the most obvious way. Just buy it, knock it down and build them another one.
Yeah.
And it does look like it was sort of like flat packed from IKEA, that school now, as it was a kind of,
Does anyone actually really understand the reason why we should be moving ground? I don't know whether this
obviously in a few years' time we're going to be in the Champions League. We're going to need a stadium that holds 60,000 people and can support all these highly paid players that are going to be strutting their stuff in the name of West Ham, kissing the badge as they go.
Absolutely.
But we at the moment own a bit of real estate, don't we? And presumably if part of the financial incentive to selling the ground is that you can liquidate that kind of asset and then you're renting the Olympic Stadium, that seems like a kind of really dangerous situation to be in that you don't own anything anymore.
Quite.
You are a wandering team that happens to be renting this former Olympic Stadium.
Well, you've also got... actually, let the proper journalist speak here.
Why?
It's a bizarre situation because you've got debts of around about 100 million. So I can understand the argument to say you sell the ground to clear the debt. But what do you do then? Because I don't think you'll sell the ground for 97 million, which is the amount that we're currently in debt for. You've got then, they reckon, conversion costs to take it from the Olympic Stadium to a 60,000 seater is going to be 100,000. So we're going to have to pick up, you'd have thought, at least half the cost of that. And then the argument assumes you can fill it. And if you can't fill 40,000 people, the fact that I can wander in from Sheffield and buy my ticket means that you're not, this is not a situation whereby there's a massive long waiting list to get a ticket for every game.
And what atmosphere are you going to have in a ground where you can do that? Exactly.
I'm glad you mentioned that. Because it would. I could almost get my head around it if it wasn't for the running track argument. And I know that sounds like sort of parochial fans get very sort of cross about the idea of being in an Olympic-style stadium, but it tangibly makes a difference. And there have been some studies done by economists who say that you can actually judge the financial difference and the results difference that having a running track around a ground makes. And it does make a difference. And if we had a running track last season, you know, 2 points difference or whatever it is, and we're down. For all the extra revenue you might be able to get with a load of theoretical people who aren't there yet, and you can't sell them for the ground that you're currently in, this assumes that, you know, the points difference is going to make a, you know, make a, that's going to be the deciding argument.
And absolutely. We actually jumped to expanding at the point we went down last season, didn't we? The inaugural season in which the Dr. Martin stand was opened was our first year in the championship.
I don't think that was right, actually. I have a funny feeling it wasn't, because I've heard you mention this before, because I remember getting a season ticket for the first year they opened the Dr. Martin stand, or the Rio stand, as we like to think. I think it was Glen Rhoda's first season.
Right, so that
so
was the season.
I could be wrong.
We fluked our way to seventh and gave us these aspirations that we were going to be brilliant. And
still our highest placed season for whatever, since Harry.
Well, probably
it?
Since,
fifth and Harry, yeah.
Yeah, Harry and fifth.
We were right that season. Yeah. We were very, very good at home and couldn't win away.
What, the first Rhoda season?
First Rhoda season, yeah.
But as Jim Grant always mentions, we had the highest goals conceded figure.
Well, we've always had a negative goal difference, haven't we?
Yeah, we did.
We managed to be seventh with some negative goal difference.
Well, we actually finished seventh on the final day of the season, didn't we? It was the highest we'd been all season.
Results we really went over Spurs on the last day, I think.
But he had a track record, didn't he? Every club he'd been at, he'd finished seventh in the first season and got them relegated the second season. So why break the habit of a lifetime?
Absolutely. Shall we broach the subject of Saturdays?
No.
It feels like we've been padding because we've done. We've actually avoided talking about it before the podcast.
I've got quite a lot of material. So. Yeah.
Eddie Chapman, though, Jim, you mentioned you had his autograph or something.
But weird story.
Wow, the glamour.
Good segue. Good cut to that moment.
Yeah. I'm just delaying. Just one tantalising.
Talking about Newcastle again. Yeah.
We unleashed the torrent of.
It was actually the board meeting that was to decide that West Ham would release Ron Greenwood to be England manager, and West Ham were due to play Norwich in the first game of the season that Saturday, and I was about 12 or 13 at the time, and I'd come belting down to the ground to get a ticket for the Saturday. Couldn't understand why there was a group of guys stood outside this door near the ticket office, which used to be up in the back of the old West Ham, with cameras and notepads and all sorts, bearing in mind this is a long time ago, so long before mobile phones and things. And I said, fellas, do you know where I can get a ticket from for Saturday's game? They said, yeah, knock on that door. As a 12 or 13-year-old, didn't know that was actually the boardroom door, because, again, the ground was a bit dilapidated and it was very easy to get yourself into the back of the stadium. Knocked on the door. Who answered the door? Eddie Chapman. Bit of a chat. Come back on Saturday, son. Could see that I'd been put up to it by a bunch of scurrilous journalists, so obviously that moment onwards I wanted to be one of these guys who completely convinced me to knock on this door in the first place. And he actually said, look, come back on Saturday, and he signed a little bit of paper saying, look, get this lad a ticket, bang 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 bang, Eddie Chapman. I've still got it at home. Obviously kept it, not because I got a clue who Eddie Chapman was, but because it was like a get a ticket on the day that Ron Greenwood then became England manager.
Well, landmark day. Good.
And now I've mentioned it on air, I can sell it on eBay. So it's
absolutely,
double whammy.
Well, you're all over the internet because you're part of the internet part of the Sun newspaper.
That, as indeed.
I said, like a science fiction.
I exist in the electric world.
Exactly. Yeah. That's a.
You've got a lot to look forward to on the internet. If you're that excited about the idea of page3.com,
I am going to buy.
The internet's got a whole world for you.
When I get home tonight, I'm going to buy a computer on Amazon.
It'll never catch
I shall write to Amazon and get them to send me a computer.
Send them a telegram.
I shall send a man on a horse to Amazon to buy.
Do you want me to tweet them for you?
You laugh. That's still our main mode of transport in Sheffield.
Oh, in Sheffield, of course. Yes, of course. All right. I'm looking at Facebook. Graham Halliday says, okay, anyone actually know what happened today? He obviously wrote it on the day of the game.
Yeah.
Great first 20 minutes. I'd say about 13. In fact, the best I've seen them all season. Yes. Second half was the worst I've seen them. Yes, we agree. Jim and I were at the game. worst they've played. It was sort of like the kind of headless days of Zola. And, you know, Zola was... I thought Zola did a lot of really good things when he came to the club, but he seemed to sort of lose the dressing room.
Do you know what I think the real problem with Saturday was? Any West Ham fan I spoke to before that game, there was a level of expectation that we might actually win the game. Mm-hmm. We've not had that for about 2 years.
No.
We could go into any game playing anyone where we thought we might win the game.
Yeah.
And the thing, with a 5-game unbeaten run, when you look at what had been going on during those games, gradually we'd been getting better. You know, half time against Fulham, things weren't working. Yeah. He made a little tactical tweak, we get back into the game.
Yeah.
Wolves away, things weren't working, we get back into the game.
Yeah.
You could see he's making changes. And at half time, I was talking to my good friend Rob Shepherd, who's obviously here
Rob.
The other week, and cracking jokes and.
How is he?
He's in a good mood.
Ebullient manner, like he displayed.
Totally.
Yeah.
But you probably won't be surprised to hear that we had a chat at half time of the game on Saturday, and we were saying exactly what everyone's been saying.
Both your wrists are bandaged, I notice. Was that, is that after chatting to Rob at half time?
You haven't seen the splint down my leg. Yeah.
I meant to mention that earlier.
We're basically saying what we've already said, first 12 minutes. Looking very good, and then sitting too deep wasn't quite working. But last few weeks have shown, Avran will have a chat at half time, he'll sort it out.
Mm.
Basically, in the second half, not only did I have to watch the dire performance on the pitch, I also had to see Rob Shepherd turn from Rob Shepherd journalist into Alf Garnett stereotypical West Ham, glasses coming off. Dear. What the fuck? And that was actually quite good for me because I didn't need to bust a blood vessel because I could see Rob was doing it for me.
Yeah, that's good.
You were channeling.
Yeah. But that was the problem. There was no change at half-time. If you look at the lineup that started the game on Saturday, it was exactly the same lineup as started against Stoke away. But at Stoke away, it was more of a 4-4-2. And it worked far better. And naively, I thought, when I saw the team sheet and it came in with those three guys, I thought, he won't do 4-3-3.
No.
It'll stick to 4-4-2. Abena will stay wide left. He's obviously going to stick Barami wide right. And he's going to try the two big men.
Mm. Yeah.
But what was also interesting was listening to Chris Hughton talking after the game. Because this part wasn't reported much. But he was actually saying when he first saw the West Ham team sheet, he was worried because he saw big men and a lot of pace. And he said himself, for the first quarter of an hour of the game, his centre-backs were struggling to cope with what was going on.
Yeah, and we didn't keep that up at all.
No, that was, you know, Carlton Cole's only ever scored one goal in a game. He's never scored more than one goal in a game. No. As soon as he scored, should have taken him off the pitch.
Yeah.
Changed the formation.
I was alarmed when I saw the team selection because I thought that basically that team that had been playing together should have sort of been kept together.
Yeah.
And because I thought Piquion sort of saw less of the ball, and at the moment he's a kind of form player for us.
Yeah,
and he saw about 33.3% less of the ball.
Had
in
it
that
not
first
been
half.
For the ref at Wolves, he would have had four goals in four games.
Yeah.
Coming into this game.
Yeah.
And very early on, there was a ball came over the top, and he and Cole ran for the same ball and virtually ran into each other.
Yes,
and you looked at
absolutely.
That and thought, well, you have to change it.
Counter argument. Is it worth suggesting?
There is no counter argument.
Okay. Next point on the agenda. I was going to say, you're dead right, and it didn't work.
Mm.
I didn't see the game. I was at a wedding, unfortunately. So I was at a wedding, fortunately, and so I didn't see the game.
Right.
But is
so
it
you're
worth
take
suggesting?
Me to task, having been at a wedding?
No, I wasn't going to take you to task. I'm going to agree with everything you said. I was a more philosophical point.
Right.
So is it worth saying that it's a good situation that we've got a manager that's prepared to try something different rather than being, you know, hampered by having to play 4-4-2.
I think there's been
a
lot of knee-jerk reaction to the fact that we've put in a pretty pitiful performance, and it was the second half when people thought this is as bad as Wolves from last season.
It cannot
get much worse than that.
Yeah.
But, you know, we have gone through a run of five games unbeaten.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Saturday, he got it wrong spectacularly.
Yeah. Agreed.
The worrying thing there was that we thought that, maybe naively, maybe not, that he had sorted things out, and slowly and gradually things were getting better.
True. Yeah.
I think what happened on
but
Saturday
it was only
was
1-1 at... Sorry, yeah. Phil. It was 1-1 at half-time, so it wasn't like he had to go in and deliver a kind of tactical change and team talk as if we were 3-0 down.
Well, no, I think
down.
He did. And in fairness, I mean, again, when you're at the game and you're obviously looking down on the pitch, we were playing far too deep. We scored the goal. We were playing far too deep.
It was
deep.
Unbelievable.
We had no width. Barton was just running free down the right. As soon as Chris Hughton had made a few tactical changes himself, Barton was free down the right to put in the cross for the first goal. He put in the cross for the second goal. Nolan was at walking pace in the middle of the pitch.
Well, the two goals were just more or less identical, weren't they?
What was Da Costa for the second goal? Just seemed to wander away.
He did, but you know, you're going to get individual errors. The thing, as a team and throughout the game, changes should have been made sooner, and they weren't.
I thought his change, which was enforced by Piquion's injury, was the wrong move, because it was a kind of like-for-like striker change, whereas the Barrera change at that point would have left him with another substitution to make later on, bring in another midfielder, because in a sense our three up front was not working, and he just basically took off a striker and tried to put another striker into the 4-3-3.
Tried to put another striker on, couldn't find one, so put McCarthy.
That's never a positive move, is it?
Not really.
Although credit to Barami for the fastest he ran all day was when he ran off to be substituted.
Yes, absolutely.
I don't know if he was on a promise in the evening or what, but I've never seen him move so fast in all my life.
Instead of the board with the numbers, they just held a model up in the air and he ran towards it. It was interesting, though. I mean, there was Obinna's shooting ability. It's like when hitting the woodwork includes the corner flag.
Have you seen? There's a good stat that I retweeted today. Very good stat. He's had the most shots in the Premier League this season without scoring. 31 shots on goal.
Isn't Frank Lampard in disguise?
Disguised as not Frank Lampard.
Yeah, indeed. Leaner.
It's extraordinary. You've got to admire him for shooting from before he's got on the pitch. That's wonderful. But he just doesn't have a shot on him, does he? But you have to say, Joe Cole still doesn't really have much of a shot, but he's got a much better shot on him now than he used to. And I've been,
those Liverpool fans will attest.
What's been good about Obinna is he can take people on.
And
he's belting down the left.
He worked his nuts off.
I didn't quite understand when he swapped to the right flank at the back end of the game and Barrera was still on the right flank. Yes. So there's then no one down the left and like everyone having a party down the right hand side and Newcastle just chatting in the middle of the pitch.
Absolutely.
But, you know, he can take people on. He won the penalty.
His general all-round play is great.
He causes danger. He pinged a couple of passes across the box in the first half. Mm-hmm. And we look dangerous when we've got someone putting that sort of delivery.
The midfield three still kind of...
No.
Just a test.
I'm saying no. You haven't even spoken. Yeah. I know what you're going to say.
It's just that thing I keep banging on, even about Scott Parker, is that he's the two thirds of him that he does brilliantly. Almost no other player is as good as him.
Yeah.
That one third, you'd almost take the other two thirds being of a lower standard if he could just find a final ball or just do something. You know, it's weird, and they're all a bit like that. I think it's been beaten out, you know, again, another drum we bang on this podcast is our big theory that Kerbishley bashed all sort of progressive play out of Mark Noble's brain. Because it's just becoming kind of a psychosis that now our midfielders really can't score goals unless the blood fills Scott Parker's veins and he occasionally scores.
It was Noble's ball, though, that set up the goal, wasn't it?
It was
a great
absolutely. He's a great player. He's a great player, you know.
And he has that bit. Basically, if you combine him and Scott Parker, unfortunately, then that.
Well, you'd still have someone that didn't really score that often. There's plenty of teams. Scott Parker scored
three goals already this season, or two
games?
Including the goal of the season.
I know, that's sort of my point, in a way, is that bar a kind of rush of blood to Scott Parker's brain when he gets that kind of Braveheart, painted blue face expression. And he scores, you know, one of his brave, courageous sort of goals. We just haven't had midfielders.
Barami used to do that, though, didn't he? When Barami first came, he would sort of maraud forward occasionally and score the odd goal here.
He doesn't look the player he was.
Sort of go back in history, but you had little players like Jeff Pike. Little tubby Jeff Pike would be pottering into the penalty area, banging in five or six goals quite happily.
Absolutely,
And you bring it forward and you've got... Berkowitz, and then even further forward, that Israeli connection, you know, Benny
Yoon. Benny
Yoon,
yeah.
We're just lacking that sort of real bit of talent. Well, even Di Canio.
Yeah.
Di Canio was sometimes sort of a bit attacking midfielder, forward, just someone who can just do something
mercurial.
A bit different. Yeah. We just haven't got that.
No, we don't have. I mean, it's that.
Well, we had Diamanti. I mean, I always thought that he was our equivalent of that.
Yeah, well, I think so I conned myself into believing he might be, but I think I believed the hype too much because he could take a good free kick,
I still remember taking people on.
Yeah, I sort of don't feel he kind of got a real run in the side, but it sort of feels that he kind of came and went like a ghost. Yeah. And Don Peretta, who does this show, Imran's father, said that he's kind of the fulcrum of Brescia's, it plays for Brescia now, doesn't it? Brescia's kind of entire set of tactics is sort of built around it.
Yeah, yeah. Was it Livorno before then?
He was at Livorno,
promoted on the back of him.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. But yes, we sort of don't have that, and it felt like Avram Grant is a bit like someone with a kind of toddler on a bicycle, that he had to yell at them at half-time, at Wolves, to get a performance out of them. And this game, he sort of thought, well, if they keep doing what they're doing, they'll get back into it. But they just didn't. In fact, I mean, just that I've never seen a team compressed to pretty much our own 18-yard line after scoring a goal.
Yeah.
You know, we were actually bamboozled by scoring a goal. It seemed to confuse us, throw us into a kind of, you know, it's just...
Well, it didn't just confuse you, Phil, because his body language after the game when he came into the press conference, I mean, apart from a very nice white sparkly pair of trainers that he was wearing that really did shine. I mean,
He's been in Essex too long.
I do wonder if they're going to last through the winter. I mean, they cannot last with that white gloss through the winter.
No, that's
a different subject. When he came into the press conference, he sort of sat, he slumped down into his chair and he was leaning forwards and he was mumbling into his microphone. And I still feel he's got to be given some time to try and sort
himself out.
You cannot make changes so soon into the season.
You've had tweets, haven't you?
But I have had tweets from people saying, you know, how long will he be given? How long should he be given? Well, if you were going to be his harshest critic, if you were going to say, how long should we give this guy? Look at our next six games. Mm. We've got three home games against West Brom's coming up.
Yeah.
We've got Wigan coming up. We've got Blackpool coming up. It's West Brom, Blackpool, Wigan are the home games.
Yeah.
Away we've got Liverpool,
Birmingham.
Arsenal's up next, obviously, in Birmingham in between.
Mm.
Out of those six games, you'd say you've got to get three wins.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got to start looking at winning some games instead of these draws. That takes you to the back end of November. Then you've got to take a serious look. But you can't be making changes now.
Saying
that he's odds on favourite to lose his job is ludicrous.
He's done a really good job, actually. Yeah. I mean, that we haven't had a manager that's been able to make changes within the 90 minutes since Pardew, really.
Yeah, exactly. Well, even with Pardew, there were times when you thought, if you're not on top in the first 10 minutes, we're not going to win this game.
Yeah, I agree, actually. So, I think Pardew was the closest we had. And if you take Pardew out of the equation, I don't think we've ever had a manager sort of since kind of Lyle, possibly Lyle, who could make changes within the 90 minutes, because Harry certainly couldn't. Harry basically, his tactics were based around the checkbook and buying players that would play well.
You couldn't buy players during the game, which would help him out.
No, that's right.
That's where his strategy fell down.
That's where he fell down, exactly.
Lads, I've just bought this Croatian lad. Get him on.
Yeah. Well, the number's just fallen off his shirt, Harry. It's just like, well, hotter iron, Jane. Hotter iron.
No, you're absolutely right, though. Yeah. I mean, he's a manager that can change things, and it's a bizarre thing because it doesn't actually feel like we're bottom of the league. I know we've just lost the last game, but we came off a 5-game unbeaten streak, admittedly one in the cup. But
that's right.
And, you know, I've been pretty, you know, positive and ebullient for the last sort of few weeks. It's
Which is why I think
very
we all went into Saturday with a positive attitude.
Yeah, totally. And I think we should, you know, I know this is going to sound very naive. I think we should just put it down as a bad day at the office.
Yes.
I think you'll learn from it. Well, I agree with you completely. It didn't work at all.
Consider this. After Tottenham, everyone thought we were going to be winning the league in 2 years. So, you know, after Newcastle, everyone's saying that we're going to get relegated.
Know,
let's just let a bit of time go by, see how we get on the next few weeks.
Zola wouldn't have done any better in the games we've played.
No, not at all. What did you think about picking Cole, though, adding it to the sort of picking
Phil,
on a pinner?
Why did he pick Cole? He didn't even answer the question properly in the press conference afterwards. So Carlton Cole has played a part in all 11 games this season, and he scored one goal, which was Saturday.
Yeah.
And as I say, he's never scored more than one in a game. Should have been
off
the pitch.
Does that not answer the question?
Yeah.
But beyond that, Rob, if you look at the back end of last season, the last 12 games of the season, Colton Cole scored one goal. Mm-hmm. Put that together, that's 23 games, two goals, and that's excluding all his blanks for England.
No.
Absolutely. I mean,
why making the fulcrum of the attack?
Sure.
Yeah.
Why suddenly do that?
It was really...
But in his defence, he did score, though.
Yes, after 12 minutes, get him off the pitch.
Yeah, fair
you know?
Point.
If I could have shouted louder, I'd have been, Avram!
It was actually... I mean, that used to happen in the kind of second or third season that Lampard, whose uncle was the manager of the team, got into the team
Thank
every week.
Thank you for qualifying that, Phil. I'm sure,
you know,
I'm sure we didn't know that one.
What happened was he would be shit for 90 minutes, but would often score in a game. Just at the time, you're sort of screaming for him to be taken off because he was just such...
He was only 12 at the time.
Yes, right, yeah.
Carlton Cole is 27 in a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah.
At the age of 27, strikers should be hitting the peak of their form.
Absolutely,
and he's not. And I don't think he ever will. He's our Michael Ricketts.
Yeah.
And Michael Ricketts had a season and a half with Bolton, got his England chance, and then £3.5 million transfer to Middlesbrough and then disappeared without a trace.
I used to live next door to Michael Ricketts.
Did you?
Well, I say next door, he used to live in the flat above me. Wow. He's a very, very nice chap. Big.
Whereabouts was this?
Yeah. Leeds. Well, he was playing for Leeds. He went on loan to Leeds for a season, for a half season, something like that.
Yeah.
So when I was leaving Central Leeds.
But that was the kind of issue at the weekend for me, was that Piquion did set up the goal. Piquion was seeing less of the ball. And
well, he was just crowded out.
Your form players, you have to get them on the ball. And we don't have creativity in the midfield. And actually, Piquion is a bit of a link-up.
Piquion himself, against Stoke away, he picked the ball up at the halfway line, beat two or three players and hit the crossbar.
Yeah.
He did it again against Wolves, and then he scored against Wolves, referee.
Disallowed.
But, you know, that again was a couple of 1-2s with players coming in from the top. He can create.
And he was literally, from the outset of that game,
if you can have a one-on-one,
a third less.
Have a one-on-one with a keeper. Who do you want to have there? Do you want Carlton Cole hitting Rosette?
Absolutely.
Or do you want Piquion, who 70% of the time... He's going to stand a chance.
Perhaps another thing you should say in defence of Avram Grant, he signed Piquion as well.
Exactly, for £1 million.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. I know he's not a young'un, but...
No, he's 32 in December, I think. But,
he's fit. I mean, we were surprised at his pace, the amount of, you know, the actual kind of raw speed he had, and the kind of, you know...
He can take people on. I mean, Andy Carroll on Saturday was showing Colton Cole what a striker should be doing. He was coming back, he was picking the ball up, he was running into positions, he was putting himself around.
Yes, absolutely.
Colton Cole has been brilliant for us, though. I know he
for
might
a season
brilliant.
And a half.
Yeah, true, but he could... I mean, it's not inconceivable he could rediscover that.
No, I think it is.
But okay, I will bow to your expertise in that.
Well, I think coming off the... But I think so, just sort of coming off the bench.
I think we've missed our chance to sell him for a big fee.
Honestly, I
think we're going to regret it.
If we'd have got big money for Cole and Upson in the summer, I'd have bitten your hand.
And don't get me wrong, I would love Carlton Cole to turn around to me at the end of the season and say, you... because I've just scored 15 goals in the second half of the season.
Yeah.
But I think I'm
sorry.
Probably
not going to happen, is it? Yeah.
It's nice seeing Andy Carroll and...
he's such a lovely man, isn't
Manuel
he?
Manuel da Costa kind of going sort of head-to-head a big struggle that...
Bit,
you eventually,
bit of a chat.
Yeah, you think that's going to be... Eventually that will be broken up by police wardens. Police wardens.
Da Costa's not going to have to move in with Kevin Nolan as well, is
no,
he?
No, exactly, yeah. I mean, with Joey Barton on the pitch, you sort of... there was da Costa, Andy Carroll and Joey Barton. Mm. You sort of thought... there was a referee, two officials, and Jeremy Kyle was officiating on the touchline for video replay decisions, I think.
He's a West Ham fan as well.
Jeremy Kyle?
Yeah.
We should get him on.
You should get him on, and talk him through his problem.
We should. That's right, yeah.
Listen to me.
Turn the tables, Jim. That's a good call.
Jim and Jeremy Carl. Yeah, I want a ringside seat for that one.
It's you and me go head to head with Jeremy Carl on this show.
Yeah.
I was thinking the other Jim. The other Jim and Jeremy Quayle would be.
The other Jim Grant.
That would be. Yeah.
And Jeremy Quayle.
What a culture clash. Quayle. Yeah,
I have to say, Rob Chapman is currently sporting a t-shirt with Thomas Repka's face on it in a very stark, high contrast claret and blue style with the word super.
You do have to be a West Ham fan to get it, because the one word on the t-shirt is super.
Yeah,
otherwise, it does look like Frankenstein. But
Is that the t-shirt on me?
Well, actually, I didn't like to say anything earlier, mate. But when you came over in the pub, I was like, geez,
it's just this one in every pub.
Limited gene pool in Sheffield.
It looks like It just looks like supper, misspelled.
That's the Czech way of spelling it.
Indeed.
So we... by the way, I should mention this to our listeners. If you have any views on, especially, I mean, obviously, a hot topic is Avram at the moment. We all think, give him time. Mm-hmm. Do you disagree? Tell us your views at hammertime@playbackmedia.co.uk. Hammertime@playbackmedia.co.uk. You can get all our links for Facebook, Twitter, and iTunes. This is all the computer world that Jim exists in. At westhampodcast.com. westhampodcast.com, and you can follow us at twitter.com/westhampodcast, or our iPhone app. You have to say I, obviously, before.
You do it in Yorkshire.
This will all be you know, in Ireland it's O-phone. In the Middle East it's iPhone. And I don't have any others of those.
You've run out of geographical locations.
Yeah, I've run out of lazy stereotypes.
You can in get the east coast of New York, it'd be a phone.
Forget about it, phone. It's at bit.ly/West Ham app.
And that's all stored in your brain.
No.
in your eye brain.
In Israel, it's oi phone.
Oi vey brain.
Oi vey phone. So we had a small discussion that started up on our Facebook group. I think Jack Quigley, who's been on the show, who lives in Australia, one of our many international West Ham fans, he wanted to start famous movie names adapted around West Ham players. Now, he suggested the Robert Green Mile. I come back, Jack, with Catch Me If You Can, and also Let the Right One In. Those are my two Robert Green ones. He also suggested Tal Ben-Hur. You see where he's going with this? This is pun-based. It's pun-based.
I should be smiling working for The Sun, should I? I should find this impressive. But
The Sun really, really does.
There are people auditioning for a sub-editor job here.
The Sun does come up with top-flight pun-based titles that you go, oh, that's good.
Surely it should be The Great Escape. That's got to be out.
The Great Escape. Exactly.
It's on every year. You know, exactly. Come on. That's what we do.
Exactly. Dyer Another Day, he came up with as well.
Yeah. Not like Dyer Hard, when he couldn't go to training because he'd been... Oh, I can't tell that story. Delete, lawyers, delete.
Yeah. Dyer Hard.
Editing, they'll give it that.
Spit roast. So
I'd just like to point out that no representative from The Sun mentioned those two words that you just heard.
Or any representative of Yorkshire.
Bloody hell. Well, that's a...
narrowed it down a bit.
That's narrowed it down enormously. Got any? Rob? I've got a couple.
There's the epic dissection of the dark side of the porn industry, uh-huh, as detailed from the inside of a caravan. Which is a Boogers Nights.
Boogers Nights. Nicely
well, done. When it came out, it was terrible, but apparently it looked really good on video.
Excellent.
There's Sam Raimi's follow up to Evil Dead and Evil Dead 2, which is a Barami of Darkness. And of course, there's the story of the zombie winger of West Ham who terrorised defences, which would be 28 days Slater.
28 days Slater.
Of course, you've got the goalkeeping crisis around December time, which is the Nightmare Before Christmas.
Nicely done. I've got a very simple goalkeeper based one. Jurassic Parks. That's one I've got.
You're at a party and you go into the kitchen to get a beer, and suddenly you stumble across two guys blocking the fridge who are having this bizarre conversation.
Jim, I forgot to set you homework before this.
I'll just sit here and drink the beer that I was trying to get out of the fridge.
You can read one or two of mine if you like.
Defensively minded midfielder who goes into arms dealing. Lord of Or. Anyway.
Say it again.
Lord of Or.
Neil Law.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Sorry.
Frank McAvenny, Which Way But Loose. Frank McAvenny, Which Way But Loose.
There's also
badly both times.
Documentary on Matthew Upson's captaincy style.
The Quiet Man.
Silent Running, I went
silent
for. But
I was going to go Silence of the Lambs, maybe. Of course, the Tim Burton's science fiction movie, Lars Attacks, about Lars Jacobson. Brooking for Mr. Goodbar, we've got, yeah. Casablanco. Kepa Blanco, remember him? Yeah, no? All right. This is about Chelsea players. Delicatessian. Delicatessian.
Did you actually high-five yourself when you came up with that one?
I did, yeah, yeah. It was really hurt, actually. Yeah, with my shoulders, I can't do that anymore. Yeah, yeah. So if you've got any of those pun-based things, I just must mention this email. We tried to open the subject, though it was such a kind of narrowed-down niche subject. What's the strangest item you've ever taken into Upton Park? Ed Pentelow,
I've got a story then when you finish this,
rose to the challenge and said, I have secretly taken a Mexican wrestling mask into the Bolin in the hope that Pablo Barrera scores. So I can whip it on, run down the front, congratulate Pablo, and maybe get on match of the day.
Oh, bless.
Now that's... Who's that Fulham player who got a mask?
Cunalga or someone, wasn't it? Yeah, Lizarro mask. Yeah.
That was the most complicated celebration. I think when you get into a celebration that needs props and a certain amount
and
of technical
time
rehearsal,
to actually put it on before you can celebrate.
Yeah, tempting fate.
Really,
I don't like it.
No,
tempting
no,
fate.
No,
just very quickly, again, sort of, I think it was like late teens, early 20s. It was a Boxing Day game. We always used to play Spurs at White Hart Lane. I'd been with my gran and granddad on Boxing Day, and then belted over on the tube to get to White Hart Lane to meet up with my mates. But obviously, I'd just left my gran and granddad, had a nice Christmas meal and everything. They give me a little bag with a few bits and pieces from the Christmas meal that I could take home with me. Get to the stadium, get to go through the old frisking from our local friendly policeman. What's in the bag, mate? Giblets. Excuse me? Giblets from the turkey for the cat. You fucking think I'm some sort of fucking idiot?
Yeah, yeah.
Hand into the bag, hand comes out covered in giblets, which is what it was, giblets for the cat. And I'm like, I'm sorry, but I did tell you.
Nicely done, nicely
done. So it wasn't
done.
Quite secret, but it was very amusing at the time.
Absolutely. Very good. Now, we've got to wrap this sucker up because we've done about 42 minutes now.
About.
Imran. Well, I've got his iPhone, which you'll know all about because of... your connection to technology.
Indeed.
It's got an app, apparently.
It's got an app. There's an iPhone app. You can get it at bit.ly/West Ham app.
He wakes up at night saying that in his sleep, doesn't he?
We have to do this. I'm sorry to make you do this, but our next game is against Arsenal away, I believe.
Yeah.
Predictions?
Well, yes. Arsenal away, first team to beat them at the Emirates. Last team
to
beat them at Highbury. Yeah. Absolutely. So we'll lose, obviously.
Yeah, West.
No, we might get. I'm going to go 1-1 draw. Yeah.
1-1 draw.
Well, you know, this is a positive podcast.
Yeah. Jim?
I'm glad you said that, Rob, because what has infuriated me with Zola was a lovely man to speak to, but you'd come to Chelsea away or Arsenal or whatever, and he'd be like, well, you know, after them we've got Fulham and we've got this and we've got that. I don't care about afterwards.
Yeah.
There's
38
league games to play.
Yeah.
You can get 3 points from every single game.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Let's look at that game.
It was interesting, though, wasn't it? Last season, we didn't actually really upset anyone.
No, not at all.
We had a couple of sort of, you know, heroic draws against Chelsea and Arsenal that were seen as kind of, you know, reinventing the wheel. Wolves were routinely kind of like upsetting, you know, Hull.
Yeah.
You know, I
Blackpool
mean,
now, yeah, you know.
Blackpool now.
Even
I mean,
West Brom, you know, they won at Arsenal and they've drawn at Man U after being two down.
It's not completely off the map in the kind of here be dragon's land that could cause an upset. But there's something about our mentality in the last couple of years.
Well, exactly, recent
because
years.
We can't beat teams that are better than us. We might be able to beat teams that are worse than us.
Well, we beat Spurs, obviously, this season, as we know. And we'd like to just mention that.
Yes.
We beat Spurs this season.
Indeed.
But we didn't just, you know, sneak through on backs against the wall. We, you know, we were good value.
Absolutely,
We can do it.
So based on all of that and going with a positive attitude, I reckon we're going to lose
3-0. Right. Excellent. I might go...
You've just changed your mind in front of us, haven't you?
I might
we can see it written across your face.
Come on, Phil. Will them to win. Or at least draw.
And Phil's just
dead. Oh, nil-nil. I'm going to say nil-nil. 2-1 to them.
Clean sheet of the Emirates.
Nil-nil.
Okay.
Nil-nil. Yes, clean sheet.
1-1, you heard it here first.
All right, well, that's it for this week's Hammer Time. With me were Jim Munro.
Thank you very much. Whiz boy, loved it as always.
Lovely to have you. And Rob Chapman.
Thank you very much. Loved it for the first time.
And we'll see you again very soon. Come on, you irons.
Come on, you irons.
Come on, you irons.
This is a Playback Media production. Get all the associated links for this podcast at westhampodcast.com. If you'd like to sponsor or advertise on this podcast, please call our marketing partners Sports Revolution on 0207 580 2850 or drop them a line at info@sportsrevolution.co.uk.